In the future, I'm going to be talking a little bit more about how the reliability of the Bible is something that should always be in question. The lack of reliable context for the Bible has been a big hindrance in modern biblical studies. Actually, the lack of sound historical methods have, made a failure amongst people and theologians to actually study the Bible correctly. Bible scholars made up their own world, their context for their text, etc., etc. Almost they just kind of ad-libbed things. And a lot of times these scholars drew it from the Bible itself and accounted for just kind of paraphrasing. A lot of the biblical accounts that we'll talk about in the days ahead are just paraphrased. You know, the world of Palestine, of course, was known, and it seemed to be better than the present. This traditional world is history, basically wouldn't have any history at all if the current conquerors weren't so against it. They're against allowing the Palestinian people to provide their, history and put out their ancient history, actually. It's corrupted all over with Judaism. And this isn't a direct attack on anyone who's of Jewish descent. This is kind of truth, The result of archaeological interests have been awakened recently. And a lot of it has been awakened, since the time of Napoleon's armies. The 19th century gave way to like a historical scholarship and time of reconstructing the Bible. And a lot of scholars traveled to the Near East. However, they created kind of their own narratives. You see the Bible change many times. The Bible's own story of the past centered on the rise and fall of Israel, of old Israel. And kind of just dominates the historical reconstructions, within the biblical realm of studies. The study of all texts from the Near East and all the excavations in Israel and Palestine has actually been infected by an aspiration by biblical scholars to kind of contradict what's being found. The stories we read from Genesis to the end of Kings have come to serve as historical context. But just how historical is this context? The stories we read at the end of Kings even include poetry, philosophical writings, and different scholarly things that are presented in such a way to create a narrative that hones down on certain aspects of the Bible and takes away from truth. Rather than just being historical, the Bible breaks the first rule in history by failing to distinguish itself from myths. But yet those people who use the Bible are quick to tell everyone else within paganism, within other religions, how much they are studying mythology, how they're speaking of the devil's words, when the Bible itself contains so much mythology that it's just mind-blowing. It's almost awkward to speak out as an academic because the Bible's rationale is sort of uncritical thinking. Everyone has been doing it for so long. It's true enough. This is what God said. Don't be blasphemous, etc., etc. But a lot of this stuff that is contained in the Bible, some of it being very factual, but some of it being very, very much mythological. And those same people from the Abrahamic walks are continually beating on others and also creating a narrative that anything that doesn't fit the Bible's narrative is a form of mythology. It's kind of awkward. It really is. However, different scholars throughout time have altered the Bible. And these alterations, want to move us in a critical direction. Those of us who study this stuff, we just don't want to just take the word of everybody and anybody. And that's understandable. The success of historical methods that were worked out in the mid-90s really has a profound effect on the way we write ancient history in Palestine today. It subsequently altered really our understanding of the Bible's place in history. You know, a lot of the Bible narratives are similar to the writings of the ancient world of Egypt, Mesopotamia, Phoenicia. And whether we're talking about 6th century BCE, Herodotus, or Josephus, or other people who wrote about the Bible, these collections of old stories and legends don't provide evidence of the history. As biblical archaeology has believed, there's no viable history that can be called even ancient Israel. There's really no reason to create any kind of ancient history. And this is an attack on Judaism. This is an attack on storytelling and truth. You know, we find ourselves, the issues that seem to persevere throughout history is the issue of Israel's origins and how it kind of approaches the history of Palestine. The resulting dilemma, as we look at, you know, it brings up a lot of different arguments. It really does. You know, in historical records, we can identify that, you know, biblical Israel creates many different stories to control the strength and control the realm that they're in ownership of. But how are these different origin stories recognized through history? They're not really necessarily the recognized history. When we grind down into history, we find many, many narratives are incorrect. These issues really, when we write history, they cause grave consequences. These grave consequences are people begin to believe things and they don't look into the history of it. The New Age narrative creates this very well. In recent years, you have all kinds of different narratives that enter in that don't even match any kind of biblical stories, don't even match anything that the Jewish people would believe in, or Hebrews, let's go back. It doesn't match anything that anyone in Islam or even Christianity talk about. This is just kind of created out of clear blue sky and yet lacks historical background. This is the thing. You know, I'll give you an example. At the excavation of Tel Dir Ala, which happened in the Jordan Valley, the text dates found, you know, that they were somewhere around the late 8th century BCE. It presents a story centered around the vision of some seers or some, I guess, psychics of God. It talks about Balaam, the son of Beor, who is also known, and you know, from basically from reading the Bible in Numbers 2 through 24. The Bible's tale is a well-known story of a prophet and his talking donkey or ass. In Dir Ala inscription, Balir is a seer of ancient Moab, while the historical story describes another prophet living in the region that would later become Syria, basically in the upper Euphrates. Both of these figures, you know, speak with the voice of God, which kind of determines the fate of what's going on today. When we look at it, Balaam is the prophet of Yahweh. In the Dir Ala text, he is associated with God in the name of Shagur, as well as what is called Shaddai, gods and goddesses. Wait, gods and goddesses? This has got to have some people in Judaism crazy. But much like the god El Shaddai of Genesis 17 and Exodus 6.3, along comes the goddess Ashtar. But if you'll notice that in Judaism, they kind of wipe out the goddess Ashtar. The biblical story is presented within the context of the narratives, which talks about Israel's wanderings in the wilderness with Moses. The inscription, however, is centuries younger than any period associated with Moses. The two stories are woven together, but what is established in this parallel is really not the existence of a historical Balaam, but an ancient way of telling stories about prophets or holy men who bless and curse the nations about their kings. It is more precisely the story of the prophet Balaam that the Deir Allah inscription gives evidence for. The extra-biblical evidence shows that a biblical roll of prophets from Balaam to Samuel and from Amos to Jeremiah belongs to a long-established literary tradition of ancient Palestine. It has nothing to do with Israel. Balaam is Palestine's earliest town. Wait, what is it? It also states Balaam is Palestine's earliest example of this tale type. Going into a second example, a biblical narrative is confirmed by ancient texts that relate to another early Moabite monument, which is the same date and slightly earlier to the Tal Deir Allah text. Now, why am I telling you all this stuff? Well, what I'm telling you is, you start digging deep into history, and you start to see these things are really kind of conflicting. By reading multiple texts, and I don't expect my listeners to read all different types of things. It's nice to do. But realize this, that you compare them, you kind of look at what this says and what that doesn't say, and you start to see that some of these people that were saints, some of these people that were characters within the story, really kind of match characters who lived prior to them. They also sometimes were Palestinians, not native Israelites, not native Hebrews. And again, I'm not blasphemizing that. I'll talk about Judaism in length in the days ahead. But a lot of times the historical texts are not matching. And why is this important to the discussion here? That's probably what you're sitting there going, well, you want to dig deep into history. You want to go back as far possible as you can within what you're studying. And there's a reason for that. The reason is, that way you can compare the stories, just like I did in kind of my two examples. Cities, people, prophets, seers, psychics, witches, all these different things begin to show themselves for what they are. There's a history involved, and that history is very important. And in the coming podcasts, I'm going to talk a little bit about some of the things that to kind of hone in on why the Bible is such a, I guess, book that's fraught with error and fraught with different accounts that are earlier and don't even match the historical accounts of these people. Someone going here, but really they're here. Like, I'll give you an example. When we see early writings of the crossing of the Red Sea, we see early writings as a crossing of the Reed Sea. Historically, we can confirm that there's a place at the Reed Sea, and you could physically walk across the Reed Sea at low tide. So, walking across the water is something that can, I guess, scientifically occur in the perfect situation, and we weren't there to know whether it was a perfect situation. We just know, hey, the Red Sea was parted, walked on water, all these different miracles occurred in that region, but yet, was it the Reed Sea or was it the Red Sea? Which one was it? That's a big thing. We see this over and over again with the parallels of, like, Moses. And we see how Moses is similar to Sargon, who would have been a Akkadian ruler. Similar births, similar situations, and a story of destruction. Because remember, the people who were in captivity in Babylon, they may have heard these stories from the minstrels or from the people who would talk about these stories about Sargon, who actually was able to conquer part of Egypt and did slay thousands upon thousands of people in Egypt and did enslave the people. But he enslaved the Egyptians. And a lot of people want to argue this history with me. I believe fully in Dr. Waddell was talking about. In his, I guess, deep discussions that he had, which he was laughed out of academic circles, despite being a well-rounded professor who could easily speak on the topic. But very few people talk about this enslavement. And the enslavement, we know the Jews talk about the enslavement with the Babylonians, or the early Hebrews, I'm sorry. But not many people talk about the enslavement of the Egyptians. And some of that is glossed over. And it's glossed over to provide a narrative that's more, I guess, positive or showing a light. When in reality, if we view this, there's very much a good chance that the Egyptians were enslaved to build the pyramids. Not to say they didn't build the pyramids, but they were enslaved by the Sumerians who created the pyramids for a reason. And I'll discuss this later. We see time and time again evidence to the fact that the Sumerians influenced the Egyptians at the time of the pyramids. We also see parallels in the gods and goddesses, which I'll talk about later. But once again, thank you, and tune into the future broadcast. I'm going to be getting into this in depth and talking more about Sumeria. People need to, you know, get some education on Sumeria, and not because I said so, but that way you know the very, I guess, the cradle of all civilization and why it's so important in the occult realm.